welcome. We are continuing in our little series that we have going on about Advent, the season of Advent. And so we thought we would continue to talk about various topics and having to do with Advent. And I thought this would be an interesting show that you flagged this article about ways of celebrating Advent. So where did you find this article, Mary Lou?
This is on Alitalia on December 4th, a beginner's guide to celebrating Advent. And it was just some practical ways for people to kind of get through the season. And it was something I could identify with because when the person who wrote this was a young girl, the word Advent was only used in conjunction with the word calendar. It was a countdown to Christmas, and that was basically it. So it really struck me that she took it upon herself to rediscover that the true meaning of Advent is, of course, waiting, and we're called to wait and anticipate for our Lord coming. So how are you going to do that in today's world? It's pretty hard with all the commercialism, which we all talk about all the time, and we seem to not be able to do anything about. So she came up with some ways to kind of minimize the outside world and kind of concentrate on what the season is really about, which is it's a time of silence and listening and to really concentrate on the reason for the season. Let's put it that way. So she came up with kind of her first item was to get a minimalist with gift giving. And that was to rethink how you give gifts and how many gifts you give and to downsize your gifts. And I can tell you that in our family, this has been going on for the last couple of years where we've said, this is too much. We can't do all this stuff. We can't buy for everybody. It's ridiculous. And when we ask somebody what they want, they always say, oh, I don't know.
You never get the right. Yeah, I agree.
So it just ends up being more of a problem than a time of celebration when you're trying to run around figuring out, you know, the 50 presents that you need to get for everybody in your family. Mm-hmm. So she was saying that 1 year, and in fact this year, it's homemade cookies and different things. So it's kind of going back to really being doing things that you do yourself, whether it be making something or cooking something, but it's kind of like something from the heart instead of a commercial gift. Let's put it that way.
Well, I like the idea of this lady who wrote into her blog and said that in their family, they give, they determine a kind of gift that will be given to the men and the kind of gift that will be given to the women. So they've had, like this year, they were going to give cookies to the men and then earrings or hair clips to the girls, to the ladies. I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's keeping it simple. It's doing that kiss, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Plan ahead. And she's like everyone else. She made a confession that she loves to shop. And I think I can tell you personally, I have yet to be to the mall except one time during this season. And I don't plan on going out. If you avoid all that, it makes life a whole lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
But she was the type, just like I can identify with, trying to find the best deals for everybody. And now what she does is she vows to complete all of her shopping, whatever she's going to do, by December 1st. Mm-hmm. So that's when Advent starts. So that leaves her time to concentrate on really what the season is about and to give her some peacefulness in prayer time. So I think that's a great idea. Get it all done ahead of time if there's something you need to do, and concentrate on your Christmas cards or something that's a little bit more enjoyable in the season than running around to all the malls. The third thing that she mentioned is to let certain traditions go. And I thought this was a little interesting. Some families, for instance, declined party invitations until Christmas Eve. From my standpoint, there are certain invitations that we would be obligated to go to. So I think that I can't identify with that as much as just not going out just to go out, to kind of
That wouldn't work with our family either. What I found was interesting is a decision that I made a long time ago when the girls were still young. And that was, I was a prisoner of the stupid Christmas cards. I know Christmas cards are great, and I know people get into them. But that was, I thought I'd been let out of jail the year that I decided I was not going to fool with 250 Christmas cards or 250 or even 100 Christmas cards. When you're busy doing everything else, it's just like a slavery. I'm sorry.
Well, and she says that on our not so important list, cookie baking and Christmas card sending. And I can tell you, I don't know about you, but I've gotten just a very few Christmas cards so far. I do still send them to certain people, and I
well,
send
it's
one.
It's a business thing too, right? It's a business thing. Isn't it like a business thing?
Right. Well, that's, yeah, and that's separate, and that goes out from the office. But if I send out a Christmas card, it will have a religious scene on it. Mm-hmm. It has to be what the season is about. Mm-hmm. And usually it's some fabulous work of art from Italy or someplace. Mm-hmm. Just to remind people of really what it's about. And it usually says wishing people Christmas blessings or something. Mm-hmm. So, but I have cut back on a lot of that. But I still do that. It makes me happy to send a greeting to somebody that I don't talk to or see during the year. And certain family members, of course. But it shouldn't be a chore like you were describing where you're sending out 250 Christmas cards.
Oh, even 100 was like a slavery. I just because then you're looking for the best picture, the best photograph, right? And then when I was sending them out, it was still where you had to get the photographs printed out, and then you had to glue them to each card, and then you had to, you know, I was doing things the hard way, and that was just, it just wasn't enjoyable, so I stopped doing it. And I don't think I'll ever start again. I like her next suggestion, although I can't really relate to that because growing up in Italy, we did not have Advent wreaths. And so for me, I've always tried to remember to have an Advent wreath, but it's always something I add as a afterthought. But when I do it, it's kind of nice to have those four candles lit like at dinner time. I did that when the girls were young because it does keep you, like, we're in the first Sunday of Advent, you know, we're first right. week of Advent, second week of Advent, third week of Advent, and then you have the countdown, right? Mm-hmm. to lighting the last candle and then the pink candle for Gaudete Sunday and all that. So that was kind of cool. But she has some other suggestions here.
Well, the one odd thing that she's doing, she spends the 12 days after Christmas leading up to the Epiphany to write out her 6 or 8 cards per night and put a personal note in it to people, which is instead of doing the Christmas cards before Christmas. So I think that's fine. I think it's an interesting thing to do, and it does keep the 12 days of Christmas in focus because we know that that's the Christmas season. It doesn't stop right. Christmas Day. Right. And I know at my house, the Christmas tree does not come down till Epiphany.
Right, like we said last time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Don't take your Christmas tree or decorations down until Christmas is over, and Christmas is not over until January. Actually, I don't think it's until the baptism of the Lord.
Right.
Which is the feast after the Epiphany. But anyway, right. Epiphany will do. Right. That's
and that's Christmas. I know in Rome, the Christmas tree stays up until that date in Rome.
Yeah.
But she says she suggests to try a new Advent tradition that you come up with. And since, you know, unfortunately, I don't have children at home right now, that would be difficult at our house.
Yeah.
But
no, not happening. Sorry. Let's go on to the next thing.
Something up. Okay. The fasting during Lent is not for self-punishment. We know that. And we need to fast during Advent because that is just a shortened Lent, preparing ourselves for the great feast of Christmas. So she is fasting from buying anything other than groceries and necessary household goods. And I give her great credit for that. Mm-hmm. And I am trying to avoid all of the cookies and different things that you run into as you're out and about and at different things at the office to avoid all of that sugar and extra pounds.
Basically, it's to take advantage of the Advent season to the penitential aspect of the Advent season and just give something up or add something.
Giving up those cookies and walking past them, you know, is difficult because it's, you know, it's fun to eat them. It's fun to socialize. She gave up social media. Now, I don't know how on earth, the way we were all connected, how we would do that, because I wouldn't know what's going on with my children sometimes unless I was on Facebook and checked in to see what was up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't think I could give that up. But food I can give up. And shopping I can give up. And, you know, with that giving up, it seems to me that you need to put something out in its place. So, you know, what is it going to be? What's that extra prayer or that extra kindness or calling someone you haven't talked to in a long time and checking in or sending someone a note? It's much more fun to do something for someone than to just sit around and kind of, you know, wallow in our, I gave this up. You know, I think works of charity would be a wonderful thing to add in there. The next one, number six, is take something on. And that's basically what I was just mentioning. When you give something up, you might be struck by how it frees you to embrace something new. And, I know today, you know, someone that we know just suffered an injury. She's going to be out of action. She's not going to be able to literally cook. So that gives me something to take on to make extra dishes and to take over to her during this season because she's not going to be able to cook for several weeks. So it's kind of nice that came about, and it's something that lends itself to planning out something and really concentrating on doing something for someone in need. Number seven, await Christmas, all 12 days of it. And again, she's talking about the liturgical calendar, that Christmas is not one day, but 12. Mm-hmm, and I think with you in Europe, you have a far greater appreciation of that than I would, because, you know, usually here in America, December 25th, done, tree gone, it's over, and nobody pays much attention to the great feasts that come up on December 6th and the baptism of John, and it just seems to it's such a commercial thing in the U.S. that it ends, it's done, we stop, and we kind of lose that mystery of, gosh, Jesus is here. He's just been born. Now what's going to happen? Because if you tie yourself into Scripture, you see how that starts to work its way through.
And I would suggest also, it's not on this article, but I found it always helpful. You can buy the Advent Companion from Magnificat if you want the paper version, but you can also download on your phone the Magnificat Advent Companion. And it's got morning prayers and night prayers and evening prayers, plus the saint of the day, plus an Advent meditation for each day. And they're quite short, and that might be something that you could consider adding on, because, you know, that kind of, if you could just remember to do the short morning prayer when you get up, and then, you know, at 6 o'clock you would do evening prayer, and then do a short night prayer before retiring for the night. That just sets your mind. It's a lovely reminder of the season that might, if you get in the habit of doing it, it might even carry on to the rest of the year.
I found something really neat. It was actually on Facebook, and it's a spiritual Christmas crib. I don't know whether you saw that, and it's preparing our hearts for Christ's coming. And every day there's one slight meditation that you make, and what they picture is the crib and all the different facets to it. And for instance, today, which is, we are recording this on the 8th. Hold on, here it comes.
Feast of the Immaculate Conception.
Yes. On December 8th, they're concentrating on the soft straw that was in the manger. Always provide your manger with soft straw by performing little acts of mortification. For instance, bear the cold without complaints, or sit and stand erect. And the prayer is, Dear Jesus, who suffered so much for me. Let me suffer for love of you. Yesterday, it was hay. Supply the manger of your heart with hay by overcoming all feelings of pride, anger, or envy. And the prayer was, Jesus, teach me to know and correct my greatest sins. Mm-hmm. I just thought this was such a sweet little thing to start off your day. And it's, you know, one line, one prayer, but it kind of sticks in your mind. And it's simple to do. It's not complicated, but it hits those things that we need to concentrate on.
And for those of you with young children or even all children, or I enjoyed it, and I'm not a child, although I think I'm a child at heart. And it was something I posted on our Catholic Way Bible Study Facebook page. And I took it from CatholicsComeHome.org. And it's a little 5-minute cartoon with two sheep talking to each other. And it's called Fleece Navidad. Fleece Navidad. And it's these two silly sheep talking to one another. But it's all about Advent. And they're in their little silly tones of their voice. Anyway, I would advise you all to look it up because it's really cute. I think you could probably even see it on YouTube. Just Google Fleece, F-L-E-E-C-E, and then Navidad. Kind of like, you know, it's a play on Feliz Navidad, obviously. And it's really cute. And I think it'd be something fun to send to grandchildren or younger children, or even tongue-in-cheek to grown children about observing the Sundays of Advent, about giving stuff up, about how it's a penitential season, about how Jesus is the reason, you know, all that. But it's very lighthearted and very nicely done.
It kind of ties in with December 4th day, where it talks about cobwebs, and it says, clean the cobwebs from your spiritual crib. Diligently remove from your heart every inordinate desire of being praised. Renew this intention at least 3 times a day.
Wow.
Isn't that good? And the little prayer was, my Jesus, I want to please you in all I do today. You know, simple, sweet, and...
You want to give them the site?
I will. Let me go back to the top. I know that it's a spiritual Christmas crib, preparing our hearts for Christ's coming. This went out on November 29th by Catherine McMannon, M-A-N-A-M-O-N. Mm-hmm. And it was on Facebook. So I guess if you go into Facebook or even just Google a spiritual Christmas crib, I bet you could find it.
Mm-hmm.
So, a service of the Catholic company, it's Get Fed, Feed Your Faith. So these are some of the things that, if you look at my Facebook page, I don't know about you, Lavinia, but everything is religious. Everything, I have all sorts of different things that come to me each day. It must be the algorithms or something and things that I like to read, but there's a ton of stuff out there. And some of it is quite good.
Absolutely. So there's a little article, Johanna Aletheia, and then let's close with, we have another 10 minutes or so where we can talk about this other article you found, The True Meaning of Advent. It's on Catholic Exchange, and it's God Comes for Us. Of course, we know that that's the play on the word Advent, which means to come, to arrive, to come to. So what did you like about this article?
What I liked about the article is the fact that it says God comes for us. How many times are we told we're to seek God, and which is very true. But in this article, it says in Advent, the hinges of history turn the other way. God seeks us out. This is what happens in the incarnation. Heaven comes to earth. The invisible meets the visible. The infinite is inscribed in the finite. And having just recently been blessed with another grandchild, you know, I've been with an infant, little Finn, and it just reminds me at this time of the year when I was just with him at Thanksgiving, you know, how a child absolutely, completely trust in anyone that's caring for them, the mother, the father, the siblings. I mean, they love to be held, they love to be rocked, they love to be fed, they love to be changed, all of that. And there's just that quietness that you know, you just exude love when you're holding this small child. And I'm thinking about Jesus coming and being that small child who's dependent upon Mary and Joseph and those around him to literally take care of him. Mm-hmm. And it's just mind-boggling. And, you know, what other God would come to us in such a way, in an innocent way, independent way, to take on our flesh to save us? I mean, it's, you know, when you think about the mystery of it, I would never have thought that this would have been the plan at all, because he could have just come and said, I'm going to save you. I'm going to forgive that original sin. You're done. But that wasn't the plan. Mm-hmm. And it just shows the absolute love that he has for us to take on our flesh. And so that's what struck me about God coming to us.
I like the thought here. It never occurred to man that mm-hmm. God might first come looking for him.
Him.
He never mm-hmm. dreamt that God might descend to him, that God would not only do this, but also become one of us. And that was beyond the imagination of ancient man. Heaven arrived on earth, but there are no armies of angels that storm the land, no horsemen of the apocalypse deliver God's wrath to sinners, no fire and brimstone, no earthquake or eclipses. Instead, angels sing songs to sleepy shepherds. A couple takes shelter in a cave, and a woman gives birth to a son.
And he goes on to say, what makes the incarnation so great is that it was so small. Think about that. So small. Hardly, you know, at that moment in time, hardly anyone noticed. No one knew what was coming except a few. And that God didn't need conquering armies or avenging angels to announce his arrival on earth. No clouds of fire or quaking mountains accompanied his descent. The kingdom of heaven broke into the earth, not with a cry of battle, but instead the cry of a newborn, because nothing could be more powerful than the fullness of God's presence in single human being, and no voice could echo through eternity like the divine word incarnate. I just love that. Mm-hmm. I just love that. You know, reminding us of the innocence of Jesus coming here as an infant and living among us and, you know, experiencing everything we as human beings experience. And it was his plan, and he chose to come to save us. It was his plan, and it was his perfect love. And becoming fully man, he goes on to say, God came to us in a way that stirs us to seek him all the more. He came as a child born at night, hidden in a cave. This is the lesson of the shepherds watching by night and the three wise men who journey from the east. We do not need to tunnel through the bowels of the earth or walk on the bottom of the sea to find God. He has already crossed the chasm of the infinite to find us. Seek and find him, because he is present to us even now. So this is, it's so simple. The plan was so surprising, yet so simple and so humble, and the love so pure. As a baby, this article just really, you know, kind of spoke to me and really, I think, concentrated on what the joy of Christmas is. It is God comes for us. It is that plan of salvation. And it's a quiet plan, bathed in a mystery that we still are trying to wrap our minds around each and every day.
Let's close our show with that thought. Very, very, a lot of food for thought for this week of Advent. Thank you for joining us.